Good morning and welcome to Community Matters. I'm your host this week, Jim McClure. And what better on a Saturday of a Memorial Day weekend than to meet with one of the people in Walworth County who plays a significant role in addressing the needs of our veterans. I'd like to welcome Nate Bond, the Veterans Service Specialist and incoming head of that office. The Walworth County Veterans Service Officer will be your new title come when, Nate.
Oh, thank you, Jim, for the opportunity to speak with you and with your listeners at WGCD. Really appreciate the opportunity. It will be the new County Veterans Service Officer on June 20th. As Christine Jordan, who has been doing this job since June of 1986, will be stepping down after 30 wonderful years as our Veterans Service Officer. And she has been a great lady to work for. I've learned so much from her, and I'm excited to be able to take over for her.
You know, people, I think, have a general perception that anything doing veterans involves with going to some faraway, unfamiliar, or a state capital veterans office. You really are truly a hometown service and representatives of several, I assume, throughout our listening area.
Yes, so in Wisconsin, particularly, every county, all 72 counties, have a county veterans service office and county veterans service officer at that office. And so those offices are usually at the county seat, at the county courthouse. Here in Walworth County, we're in Elkhorn at the government center, which for most people locally means the old courthouse. And we're in room 110 there. We help administer a lot of the state programs, and we also help with veterans with signing up for the federal VA programs, such as the Veterans Health Administration and the Veterans Benefits Administration.
And we're going to talk about a lot of those benefits that you provide. I think we have to start with, of course, the timely news that many people have been talking about this week. The comments of the current Veterans Administration Secretary at the federal level, making an analogy, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe it was at a speech where he was comparing the common criticism that a lot of veterans have, that you have to wait a long time when you go to a VA hospital. And the point the secretary was making was something akin of, well, you wait a long time to get into Disney World or Disneyland, and at the end of the day, what those in veteran service want to do is provide a good experience, and you want people to come away with a good experience. And if you're going to Disneyland, you don't talk about the long wait in line. You talk about what a great time it was. Well-intentioned, but a little off the mark. From your listening post, what's your reaction?
It's almost laughable. I understand Secretary McDonald's point is that the quality of care is what veterans truly are concerned about most. However, part of that quality of care is being able to get the care on time. Nobody dies because Space Mountain didn't happen within, 3 days. But people do die of cancer. People do die of other issues that are related to heart disease and diabetes, and a lot of the problems that our veterans have, especially our new crop of veterans from Vietnam era who were exposed to Agent Orange, and because of that exposure have very deadly diseases, heart disease and prostate cancer and other types of cancer. And so telling them that it's like waiting for a ride at Disneyland is ludicrous, to put it nicely. I understand what Secretary McDonald is trying to say. Measuring the success of care is very important, but part of that success is timeliness. If we can save a person's life because we were able to take care of them with chemotherapy a month earlier rather than making them wait without care, obviously that's important. That's something to measure. Not only that, Disney does measure its waiting lines. Disney measures everything. Come on. And I'll give it to the secretary and others at VA. They are doing they're doing a very thorough look at what are ways that they can reduce that wait time. One of the programs that they came up with last year that they worked with Congress through was called the Veterans Choice Program. It's a way of helping veterans go to facilities other than VA facilities. And here in our community of Walworth, Kenosha, Racine area. Everyone lives within 40 miles of a VA facility, but quite often they can't get the care they need in the timely manner they need at one of those VA facilities. So with the approval of their doctor, they can use the Veterans Choice Program, which entails calling up the Health Net Federal Services and using that insurance plan to pay for care at a non-VA facility. There have been issues with that as well. Health Net Federal Services has agreed that they're going to need to hire 1,000 more employees nationwide to handle that amount of traffic. And part of the Health Net Federal Services Veterans Choice Program is causing some deficit problems at the VA. Programs that used to exist, like the VA non-care program, where the VA would directly contract with facilities, are shorted money in order to pay for the Veterans Choice Program, which is, quite frankly, still in its infancy and having many, many difficulties. So they're trying to attack the problem, but they definitely need to have a closer look at it, and they need to get a kind of a, how should I say this nicely, a grip on reality. People do care about their wait times, and wait times do matter.
How can you address this issue at the county level? I imagine it starts with awareness of options.
That is the number one thing, helping veterans understand what options they do have, especially our senior veterans who have Medicare A and B and possibly D, or might have a Medicare supplement plan such as with Humana or Aetna or Health Net. There are many different options that they have. I would encourage all of our veterans who are 65 or older to go to the Aging and Disability Resource Center at the county's Health and Human Services building up across the street from the new courthouse up there on NN. The Aging and Disability Resource Center is a great help to all of our senior citizens, but especially to our senior citizens who are also veterans. We work closely with that organization. So getting educated on what your options are. Signing up for Obamacare, going to the, you know, health.gov website is very important. People need to explore their options and get coverage. The VA is credible coverage under Obamacare, and it also is credible coverage for Medicare Part D. It's not credible coverage for Medicare Part B, but again, there's many different options that people need, and our office in each county veteran service office throughout the state is there to help educate veterans on what their health care coverage options are.
And an important part as far as dovetailing with Obamacare is you want to go, as I understand it, to healthcare.gov. If you go to healthcare.com, you're going to end up in the middle of, I think, a lot of pitches that aren't necessarily designed with the user in mind.
You definitely have to be careful on the internet. You don't want to go to whitehouse.com or, you know, those types of websites by mistake. .gov, .gov, definitely.
And Nate, in your work with the County Veterans Service Office, do you find yourself sometimes at the end of the day just rubbing your head and saying, geez, I can't believe this guy or this gal that came to see me got into this strait or this problem? Do you sometimes marvel at how things can be kind of messed up?
Well, quite often it does come from just a lack of knowledge. Veterans find themselves needing help but don't know where to turn. And unfortunately, we end up being their place of last resort in their minds when they should have just come to us at first. They don't think they've earned anything, which is always boggles my mind that some of our, especially when we had our, I've been dealing with the last of our World War II veterans who are still in our community, and these men served overseas, they have shrapnel wounds, they've lost limbs, oh my goodness. And their attitude is, well, I did what I was asked to do just like everybody else. I didn't really earn anything. And that attitude, though heartening to us also, it's a little frustrating because these men, I mean, and women, they earned their benefits. You know, this is part of the contract that we, the people, signed up with our veterans for. And so the frustration on my part is, how do I get in touch with them sooner so they know that these are their benefits that they've earned? So For instance, just a little over 2 years ago now, when I first came on the job, my boss, Christine, called me into the office to kind of coach me through how to do a benefits claim. And it was with a World War II veteran, his bride. So 92-year-old man, his 89-year-old wife, and their Vietnam veteran son, who was trying to help care for them. Mm. Very sad situation, hard straits, thinking they were going to lose their home, not having enough money to pay for the health insurance that they needed. And by the time they left the office, we had the gentleman on a pension plan, his son, who was a Vietnam veteran, signed up for disability checks because of the diseases he incurred from Agent Orange exposure, and just a complete turnaround for that family. It just, that's just amazing to me. So there are times when it is frustrating to see that people are going without the education about their benefits. And I know there are some things we can do locally at the county, and I'm hoping that the state Veterans Department of Veterans Affairs is able to do more with its program for communicating to veterans as well.
Do you think that it has to do in part with the basic character of people who go into the service, that they don't think that they deserve anything, that, you know, they did what they were supposed to and the government treated them well, and maybe they got a, you know, maybe they got a shot at a VA loan when they got out, or gosh, they've done well in life, so, you know, what does the government owe me? But it, does it come in part from that self-sacrifice that somebody who goes into military service has as an attitude?
You know, I think when we look at our World War II, our Korean War veterans, and even our Vietnam era veterans, many of them were inducted, not enlisted. they didn't really have much choice. They got the letter in the mail saying, show up, and you're in. And oh, by the way, you're in the Army or the Navy or the Marine Corps, whichever one we want to put you in. Mm-hmm. And but they served. That was that generation. They did what they were asked to do. They probably used their GI Bill and got their GI home loan guarantee, and they thought, thank you. You gave me a paycheck, and you got me a college education. What more could I want? And so, yeah, there's that. With our modern all-volunteer service, there's more of that mindset of people who want to serve. They that's their attitude. They're there to serve others, not be served themselves. And I see that quite a bit, especially among our newest generation of veterans who understand that part of their enlistment contract was the GI Bill, and that's pretty much all they're interested in right now. But when I was 24, that's all I cared about was I'm signing up for money for college, and I'm getting through 18, no one told me that ankle I broke while in service was going to be a real pain in the ankle. Every morning when I got up. It's also a pain somewhere else, but we won't talk about that.
All right.
And that would limit my ability to, you know, earning potential. And not just that, but if people who have more severe injuries, upper body, you know, arm and hand injuries, who can no longer do some of the what we would consider basic tasks of every day, who need help, who need an extra paycheck every month to make up for their loss of earning potential. And so I relish the opportunity to help veterans who are in that situation. I truly do. They're not really looking for anything. They're not looking for a handout. They're looking to get a little extra help, and they're not concerned so much about a free ride. They don't want a free ride, and they don't really want to get anything they're not due. And so often for me, it's a education process and saying, look, when you came to the military and we did that initial physical fitness test on you, you know, you get to duck walk naked with 50 other naked guys around the room there in the exam room. The doctors made notes of what was right and wrong with your body, and the contract said that when you're finished, you'll be in the same physical condition, or we'll compensate you or your loved ones for any changes. And so we're just fulfilling the contract that we, the people of the United States, made with these veterans. It's nothing special, and they don't want to be treated special. So I have to explain that you're not special, but you are due these benefits. And so please let me help you.
In an election year, it seems like there is a consensus on veterans issues, if nothing else. Everyone say veterans deserve better, and we're going to give them the best care, and if elected, I'm going to improve this, and this. How come we never quite get there? Is it essentially the human condition that there's no such thing as a perfect service or a perfect government organization, or, you know, do people really grow lax in their service to veterans on the federal nationwide level?
Gosh, Jim, that's a huge question.
We only do huge questions on community matters.
Yeah, I read a paper recently, and I wish I could remember the gentleman's name, but he was talking about the Iron Triangle in Washington. The Veterans Benefits Administration, Congress, and the Veterans Service Organizations, such as the American Legion, the VFW, the Disabled American Veterans, the Military Order, the Purple Heart, all of these organizations. And everyone's concern is taking care of veterans. Congress has a legitimate concern as representatives of the American people to care for those who defended our freedom. The Veterans Benefits and Hospital Administration, the Veterans Administration, is tasked with caring for veterans, so it has obviously a concern for taking care of that. And the Veterans Service Organizations, the veterans themselves, obviously have great concern. But there's a lot of institutionalization among all three entities. And so there are lots of ideas of what can and can't happen, and innovation isn't a normal part of that process. So, for instance, when Secretary Shinseki, former General Shinseki, former Chief Staff of the Army, mm-hmm. became Secretary of the VA, and he came in and made numerous changes, in some ways dragged the VA kicking and screaming into the 21st century through computer files instead of old paper files and boxes. It was really hard work for him to get the changes made that he needed to make, and that's because of that institutionalization of things. So as far as coming up with the innovative solutions that are probably needed, it can be a tough road to hoe for any leader, but especially when it has to be the leaders of three different institutions all at the same time. Some people have proposed, such as Senator McCain, going to a more of a insurance coverage plan for veterans as opposed to the hospital network that the VA currently is. And so I, as a veteran, wouldn't necessarily have to wait for an appointment at the Madison VA or the Milwaukee VA. I could take my veteran's insurance card and go down the street to Aurora or Mercy. And that's an option that some people are exploring. But then there are some things that our VA hospitals just do better when it comes to taking care of veterans. And in many ways, the VA hospitals have become I talk about being an institution and how innovation isn't part of being institutions, but many of the medical innovations in the United States come from research that's done at the VA. Many of the ways we treat diabetes now were developed at the VA. Many of the ways we treat heart disease were developed at the VA. Spinal cord injuries and traumatic brain injuries, the VA is on the leading edge of helping with veterans who have those problems and working toward coming up with cures for these types of things. So there's a mixed bag. How do you handle the situation? I think there's a mixed answer, and it would take those three organizations that I mentioned, sitting down together and not throwing any idea out because of whatever parochialism of ideas there are. But truly, and the great thing about the VA being in all 50 states and in like Wisconsin having three VA hospitals here, they can run test pilot programs, and if it works, it works. Let's expand it. If it doesn't work, we tried. And so I'm hoping that those organizations can truly sit down and work through those plans. And money, of course, is an issue. Budgeting and what programs couldn't get cut, what programs shouldn't get cut, how much should we raise taxes. This all goes into the huge political environment that we're in right now with this upcoming presidential election. So, man, Jim, I wish I had the answers. If I did, I'd run for president. But
keep your options open, Nate. It's that kind of weird election year, as you know. We're speaking with Nate Bond, retired Army Lieutenant Colonel, currently the Veteran Service Specialist for Walworth County, and as of next month will be the Walworth County Veteran Service Officer in charge of serving the veterans of Walworth County. And if you're a member of the county, by all means, feel free to contact them, come in and see them at the old courthouse on the green, the courthouse square in Elkhorn, or see your local county service representative in Racine or Kenosha counties for some of the programs we're talking about today on Community Matters on WGTD-FM in Kenosha, Racine, Lake Geneva, and Elkhorn. And Nate, let's talk a little bit about what you bring to the party, your own record of service and your involvement in other veterans organizations locally in the Geneva Lakes area. How did you come to join the military, and what came of it?
Well, Jim, I grew up in New Hampshire, of all places, a little town called Pittsfield, New Hampshire, with a great military tradition in that town. Every 4th of July, the large parade and fireworks, of course, and General Thing, who was an Air Force general from World War II, lived down the street. His mansion's still there to this day, kind of. And so there was quite a tradition there. My own family, not so much. I did have some uncles who served in World War II and the Korean War. And so I joined the military, quite honestly, so I could have money for college. But the next thing I knew, after 24 years, 10 months, and 7 days, I was retiring. I was blessed with a great career, Jim. I had some wonderful soldiers who worked for me, some great officers who were senior to me, who mentored me through the process. And I started off as an enlisted soldier and then received a commission through the ROTC program at the University of New Hampshire. And again, truly blessed. I retired, ended up retiring as a lieutenant colonel from the regular Army. Initially was in the Corps of Engineers, and then transitioned into public relations afterward. So my last duty assignment happened to be in Chicago, and as the chief of the Midwest Public Affairs Office for the Army. So that was a great time, and I've really had a wonderful career. I served in Korea, Germany, all over the world. Truly a blessed time. There were some bad times, obviously. We've been a nation at war since August 2nd of 1990. And so there have been ups and downs in that career that I was part of. I retired here in the Lake Geneva area because my wife, Julie, grew up here, right here in Williams Bay, Wisconsin. Her parents owned the Chippewa Resort, and she grew up there. Here in vacation land, or is this Dairyland? I can't remember what's.
It's America's Dairyland.
America's Dairyland.
That's what it says on the license plates. Or used to, anyway.
Used to. Yeah. This is a wonderful place. The land of lakes here, and wonderful area. And when it came time for us to retire, we've just always known that we were going to come back here to retire. And so I joined the American Legion and the Veterans of Foreign Wars, the VFW, and the Disabled American Veterans, almost along the lines of, it's kind of, I felt like it was my duty to continue serving those who served. And that finding the Veteran Service Specialist job in Walworth County was, almost providential, if not providential. I didn't realize that I had spent 25 years in the military in order to take this job.
It is sometimes interesting how life hands us that unexpected voyage where you realize it's just part of a continuing trip. And for you, for that individual who walks into the office, it must be just a real thrill to continue that association and to continue that service.
It is, and it's always wonderful to sit with a veteran and when they come in and they sit down at my desk, and I've put up a couple things on the wall, and so to identify that, yes, I am a veteran too, and a couple things on the desk. We have these unit coins, service coins, mm-hmm. that have become popular everywhere now. It's almost like even the ice cream guy that has his own coin that he hands out to people. I don't get
right.
it.
Right, the idea that everybody has a challenge coin that if you're sitting down for a root beer or a
other beverage,
we have some of them in Wisconsin that you both put your coin down on the table, and whoever has the highest ranking one pays, I think.
Yeah,
is how it works.
Or doesn't pay. I think it's the other way around.
Okay. Yeah.
So thank goodness I have a Chief of Staff of the Army coin that I can slide in there, unless somebody has the Joint Chiefs of Staff.
That gets you 4 stars, right?
Yeah, I think so. Anyway, I end up buying anyway, usually. So we're in Wisconsin, so my root beer bill is kind of large.
Yeah. Let's run the gamut of veterans in need of service. I imagine, first of all, let's start with the ones dating back to World War II. I imagine you have families that come in at the start and say, dad or granddad isn't what he used to be. He has trouble remembering stuff. We don't have his records. We know he served in the Army. There's the picture over. We know he was in the Navy or Marines or Army Air Corps. We have the picture over the mantel place. But where do you start to unravel it all?
So that is a common challenge for us when people come in and say, as you said, dad or granddad served, and we want to know what benefits are available to him. And from my position, I need to know when they served in order to determine what their benefits are. A veteran is a veteran is a veteran is not a true statement. Each veteran, based on the time that they served and what they did in service, has different benefits available to them based on that contract that we, the people, signed with them. So finding military records is always a challenge, especially the older the veteran is. Now, many of them did exactly what they were told to do. They came home and they registered their DD Form 214 at the courthouse. And so it's easy for us to pull their name up and just go and get a photocopy of their military discharge, their DD Form 214. It's right there, right at the courthouse. And so we can start processing their benefits claims immediately. Other people, not so easy. Being here in a border area where a lot of residents from Illinois have moved to Wisconsin, ordering those records can become a little bit more difficult. However, it's not impossible. With the person's date of birth and Social Security number, place of birth and probable place of entry into service and generalized time frame of when they entered service, I can order those records from the National Personnel Record Center in St. Louis.
On Page Road.
Yes, on Page Road. Jim, you've been there.
Well, let's put it this way, Colonel. Anyone who has ever wanted to do anything associated with veterans or re-upping, in my case, or attempting to anyway, all roads seem to lead to St. Louis, and all roads seem to, if one is conspiracy-minded, saying, well, your records may not be there because they were lost in, quote, quotation marks, the
fire, yes. Back in the early 70s, there was the massive fire that unfortunately did destroy quite a few records, but mostly of World War II veterans between A and Y.
And this is a very modern building in St. Louis. Mm-hmm. I think the fire happened in 73 or 74. It couldn't have been built more than a year or two before. Climate controlled, sprinklers out the yang-yang. Mm-hmm. But a lot of records were lost.
Yes, a lot of records were lost, and it was definitely a tough challenge. But what's been interesting is how many of the records they've been able to reproduce, and mostly from going back to the actual installations where the records were transferred from and getting the copies that were retained there, or contacting veterans themselves who provided records, going to old selective service board locations or draft board locations and collecting up information from who was drafted and when they were released from active service. So a lot of those records have been reconstructed and are now available.
And thank goodness, if you served in the Army for Fort Benjamin Harrison in Indiana, and in Cleveland, if you were in the Naval Service, if all else fails, the accountants apparently came through, and there's a way to recreate records through the accounting end of things at those institutions.
So I've been told, yes, Jim. Some reason the government cares about paying people and not paying people. I've been told that if you weren't there, they didn't pay you, and if you were there, they might. But they never pay somebody who wasn't there. That's what I've been told, and I believe that. So a lot of our World War II veterans do face that problem of where there is no formal record. There's only what was reconstructed. But that's good for government purposes. That I've quite often gotten, instead of the discharge paperwork, I've gotten a certification of service from the National Record Center saying, sorry, the record no longer exists. However, we know from draft board documents and other situations that this person served from this date to this date honorably. And that allows me to start work on benefits. Wartime era veterans who are ill or needing long-term care may qualify for the improved VA pension. And the improved VA pension is meant to help veterans offset the cost of long-term health care. That includes in-home care, paying for an in-home care agency or paying for an individual care provider. It also includes living at an assisted living facility or in a nursing home. And so it's a means-tested program. It does mean that a person's, generally, their assets have to be below $80,000, not including their own home. Many of the Medicaid rules, also apply to the VA pension. And that is available. It takes a little bit of math work on my part, but I'm more than willing to help with that. Again, as I was talking about the story about my first weeks on the job and helping that World War II veteran get his pension started, part of that was because he was receiving in-home care from his son. And we were able to fill out those affidavits and make sure that money exchange was being accounted for, and so that those costs could be recouped through the VA pension. And that's a big part of my job, actually, is working through those pensions. And not just for the veteran, him or herself, but also for the veteran's spouse. The spouse of a wartime veteran is also eligible for a pension to help offset the cost of long-term care.
We've become very good as a country at welcoming our veterans home. We've certainly created quite a few veterans in the past 10 to 20 years, especially with the global war on terror. What is the important equivalent today for the recent veteran who's left service? What's the equivalent of registering at the county courthouse? What's the first thing you should do once the ribbons are down off the tree and the welcome home cake is consumed in terms of ensuring that you get into the veterans pipeline?
So the first thing the veterans should do is go through their transition assistance program, either the Army Career and Alumni Program or the Navy's Transition Assistance Program, TAPS. And in that process, they should receive a VA benefits briefing. And they should also be walked through the process of setting up an e-benefits website account. Now, it's the ebenefits.va.gov, www.ebenefits.va.gov. Let me say that one more time, www.ebenefits.va.gov. And setting up that profile on that page, and that is a really good first step that every new veteran should take. And then bringing that DD Form 214, that military discharge, to the courthouse for us to register. And then just sit down and talk about what your goals are and what benefits might be available to you already. And those are the two number one things that our newest veterans should do. And if you haven't done it and you've been out for a couple years, it's not too late. Let's start right now.
We've talked about health care. Let's certainly talk, too, about employment. I imagine that's job one for a lot of new veterans, and a job not easily undertaken in an economy that still hasn't, for many people, seen a full recovery.
So the Federal Department of Veterans Affairs works with each state to develop programs for veterans to get new jobs. And in Wisconsin, the Department of Workforce Development partners with the VA and the Wisconsin Department of Veterans Affairs, and each county is serviced by a veterans office, not my office particularly. So, for instance, Kenosha, Racine, and Walworth County all share the Department of Workforce Development office, and there's a veterans advisor there who specifically helps veterans learning about their reemployment processes. So helping veterans learn how to properly write a resume, helping them with interview techniques, getting them signed up for vocational rehabilitation classes, and there are many other programs to help veterans find jobs, right down to how to get your Indeed account set up and start searching through job postings and then posting that resume that you've toiled over for the last few days with expert help to get you the look that you need. Many of our younger veterans, when they first enlisted in the military, enlisted with a program that was looking forward to when they would eventually transition out. There are many companies that have worked with the Army particularly to guarantee that when that soldier, sailor, or Marine gets their honorable discharge, that the company will automatically interview them for the opening. Regardless of what their resume says, they'll get that interview. And quite often, companies find that those skills that are developed in the military, being on time and dressed correctly, that's a big thing in the military, and that's a habit that's carried forward. The work ethic that is developed in the military is a strong work ethic. The young men and women today who come out of the military aren't looking to sit on their butt. Mm. They're looking to do things, and they're used to a do environment. And they are can-do type of individuals who aren't looking for excuses to stop work. They're looking for solutions to keep the job going. And hiring them, whether they have all the specific skills you're looking for or not, you know what, give them a chance, because they're fast learners. They've proved that. They can handle stress. They've proved that. And they've got those essential skills to work that everyone finds hard to find.
Well, and I think, too, that in an era where loyalty is far from taken for granted, you know, people grouse that companies have little loyalty toward employees and vice versa. I can't find people I can count on. You do develop in the service, don't you, a sense of loyalty, a sense of responsibility, a sense of I owe something to those around me and the boss, the CEO or the senior NCO.
That's definitely loyalty is, well, one of the core values of the Army is loyalty. It's the first one listed, is the idea that you have to be loyal to the nation, to the Army, to the individual unit, and to your fellow soldiers. And that, the same for the Navy and Marine Corps and the Air Force and the Coast Guard. That idea of loyalty is very highly developed within each of our service members. And so, but loyalty is a two-way street. And so if you want to hire somebody who is loyal, you also have to maintain that loyalty with them. These are men and women who are used to the idea of giving their life to protect the person next to them. And so giving a couple extra hours to the company so the company can be successful isn't far from the pale of their understanding of life. So, yeah, but loyalty is a two-way street. Mm-hmm. And I'm no businessman, Jim, but I know that the county has gotten a lot of free hours out of me over the last 2 years. But those hours are well spent because they're taking care of my fellow veterans.
On this Memorial Day weekend, I think it's important not to confuse. They're certainly associated, but in the secular, non-military world, people tend to confuse Veterans Day and Memorial Day. Memorial Day, I don't think you can find a veteran worth his or her salt who doesn't say, you know, appreciation that people tend to now have of military service isn't about me, it's about that guy that was left behind. And it is important to remember. How will you be spending the Memorial Day weekend, and what can people do to really remember those who served before and either lost their life in service or since have passed on, and to remember the tradition of what they did and where they did it.
So as a member of the local American Legion post in the town of Walworth, which includes the village of Walworth, the village of Fontana, and most of the village of Williams Bay, there will be some ceremonies that I'll be part of as the adjutant of that post. We'll be going to the Cobblestone Cemetery, where one of our namesakes for our post, Mr. Ingalls, is buried. And we'll also be going to the Brick Church Cemetery, where the other namesake, Mr. Keppen, is buried. There'll be parades both in Walworth and Fontana and here in Williams Bay. There's also, as part of my duties with the county, I'll be at the Memorial Day ceremony there at the county courthouse that the city of Elkhorn helps put on. I think the thing to remember is we are recognizing that there are those in our history who, as Abraham Lincoln said, have given the last full measure of devotion. That government of the people, by the people, and for the people shall not perish from this earth. And so on Memorial Day, as we pause to remember those who did give that last full measure of devotion, that we here should be dedicated as well to keeping that government for the people, of the people, by the people, and for the people strong. In this election year, I would encourage everybody to definitely look at what their role as a citizen is,